Up next, we have A Healthy Toronto by Design, the role of public health in shaping a healthy city. And we have Ronald McFarlane as the speaker. He has worked on improving the quality of Toronto's environment through advancing policy and research on air quality issues, toxic substances reduction, and creation of a healthier built environment. He has been instrumental in Healthy Toronto by Design, a call to strengthen the healthy city's approach. His current work includes a review of the principles to guide urban planning and design so that Toronto can become an active city for all.
Thank you, and good afternoon. I will also indicate that I have no relationships to disclose, but I also would at the same time want to acknowledge the funding that we have received from the Canadian Partnership Against Cancer, the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Canada, and the Ontario Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care that has supported some of the work that I'm presenting here tonight today. I will start by providing you a bit of information on the Ontario context and the context I'm working in. I highlight the sort of the major challenge that we're facing and talk a bit about three major areas of work: active transportation, transit, and planning, and then a few concluding remarks. Healthy cities don't just happen. They happen by design. And this is what our medical officer of health said in 2001 when he released this report, Healthy Toronto by Design, which was actually a call to reinstate the healthy cities approach in municipal government, where we are encouraging interdepartmental collaboration and trying to put a health lens on decision making. And this was partly spurred by the fact that we had an administration that was looking at reducing taxation and therefore looking at quite widespread service cuts in the city services. And of course, Healthy Toronto, a healthy city, is built on the foundations of a healthy environment, a healthy social environment, and also a healthy economy. All those three are needed before we can have healthy people living in the city. And we thought that that objective was a common objective to all. So, the City of Toronto is the largest city in Canada. It has approximately 2.8 million people. And the region around it, the Greater Toronto Area, has 5.5 million people. Approximately 50% of the people who live in Toronto were born outside of Canada, and 50% of the people are visible minorities or people of non-European descent. It's also the economic engine of the country. Toronto Public Health is a local board of health, and we report to the Board of Health. Medical Officer of Health, who is my director, reports to the local board, but we are at the same time a municipal agency. So we are a hybrid, directed by the board, but administrated through the municipality. What's happening in Toronto? These six maps show how low-income populations and high-income populations, the distribution in the city has shifted over the years. The first map in 1970, you see that the poverty is found mostly in the central part of the city. And as the years go by, the areas where people on low income live spreads to areas which are now more on the outlying areas. And you can actually see a bit also of gentrification. This is actually occurring more in the central part of the city. And if you look at what we know about the health status, and this I'm just showing here one map, which is of the people who live in Toronto, you will see this pattern quite in most places. And that is, in fact, because this pattern of illness, of course, follows more or less the socioeconomic status of the people living in those parts of the city. So as you can see now. And in this map, you actually see a map of the density of the population of Toronto. So you see where people are living. And you will notice that the areas that had higher rates of disease were lower income people. Generally now are found in the areas that are actually low density, and people of higher income and better health live in areas that actually have a higher density. So the shift has actually been a shift to the suburbs. And of course we know the suburbs were not built with walking in mind, they were built with cars in mind. And a lot of these people now living in the suburbs cannot afford cars. And so access to those areas by public transit becomes essential. And the other thing, however, which is different a bit in Toronto as other cities, is that in fact we actually see there are actually quite a lot of apartment neighborhoods in the suburbs. So we do see areas of high density in the suburbs. So there are clusters of apartments actually across the whole city. Now these post-war neighborhoods, essentially, which were built around the car, now home to a growing number of people living on low income, have large number of newcomers. Many of those buildings, even the apartment buildings, are deteriorating. They were built in the 1960s and 1970s, and due to rent control in many of those buildings, they've never been maintained. So they're really coming in very poor quality now. And as I mentioned, there's poor health overall in those areas. And those areas also contain what the planners call the stable neighborhoods in our official plan. These are neighborhoods that are anticipated not to change over time for many reasons. One is that they are areas where little investment is occurring. We're not seeing any growth in those areas. And as well, they don't meet the areas of growth identified in the Provincial Act that essentially concentrates growth along transportation corridors and in transportation nodes. Therefore, and those are actually the areas where the people are most in need to live, but there's little investment to actually improve their environment. Now, this is a map that we developed about a couple of years ago, and looking at walkability. And you will see again the same similar pattern. Areas that are least walkable, of course, are in the suburbs, and the areas in downtown are fairly walkable. Now, part of what has happened in terms of the work after we presented these maps of walkability and also presented information that we had received about the conditions in the suburbs, especially around the apartment neighborhoods, we were sort of urged by the Board of Health to try some transportation pilot projects to try and see if there would be abilities to actually improve the walking and cycling environment in those more stable areas. We actually ended up with four different active transportation projects. One of them is actually downtown, and that is it's still a controversial area because, in fact, the issue here is the roads are actually quite narrow downtown, and taking space for a cycle lane is quite controversial. But there were also a group that were quite ready to go and start and actually become active. So that's why they, although they didn't quite meet our criteria, they still ended up in our four pilots. And the other three are in more suburban and more deprived neighborhoods. We are working with the community, trying to build community partnerships and get the communities themselves come up with the recommendations of how to improve their neighborhood. And we're working or trying to work with transportation services who prefer to tell the community what they need as opposed to hear from the community. But we'll see how it goes. We're trying very hard. Again, one of the things that has happened recently is, in fact, it was not something, an initiative that actually came from the Planning and Growth Committee. It was actually a call to city planning to develop complete street guidelines. And we will be working with city planning and reviewing the health impacts of various design options they could choose for complete streets. So, in a sense, a more positive relationship here. Another piece of work that we have looked at is access to transit. And as I mentioned before, in the where the large proportion of people on low income are now finding themselves are in the more suburban areas. So through this transit score from the Martin Prosperity Institute, we try to identify areas where there would be low accessibility. Some of those areas are, in fact, high-income neighborhoods, and so we are less worried about those, but there are still some that, in fact, are low-income. So we're trying to say, look, make sure that we address the issues, at least in the areas of low income. This is a relationship with our transit authority, which is just beginning, and I don't know. Right now, in fact, Toronto Transit is one of the biggest files in terms of municipal governance. It is considered by the Medical Officer of Health. This is probably one of the key decisions that is going to be happening now in terms that will affect the future is investment in expanding our public transit system and the active transportation system as well. So it has actually been in the past year, there have been quite a few public consultations run by our planning department. We have been invited as public health to present the health case for supporting this investment, and we continue to do so because right now there is clearly a very strong feeling that nobody wants to pay for any improvement in transit. So I don't know how we'll manage if nobody wants to pay. But that's sufficient. So we also had a report to the board last year looking at strengthening the official plan to support health. And we identified various areas in the official plan where we felt that the official plan could provide better guidance in terms of improving the city for making it more healthy. And the ones are listed here as some of the major ones. There were actually about 30 recommendations. And one of our projects we are working with, and we highlighted also through our comments on the official plan, are these tower neighborhoods that I mentioned earlier. And so this was actually a collaboration with Toronto Public Health, the Centre for Urban Growth and Renewal, which is actually a centre attached to the University of Toronto, a research centre. And it built on the work of the United Way of Toronto. And through that collaboration, we actually ended up having City Council adopt a new zoning designation, residential apartment commercial. This new zoning category would allow some commercial activities to be built or developed around these apartment towers. Because they were in residential neighborhoods, they were not allowed to have any commercial activities. So you could not even have a little corner store or anything anywhere near, even though you might have 3 or 4,000 people living in these little clusters of apartment neighborhoods because they were residential, no commercial activity was needed. And we couldn't even put in, well, we were trying to put farmers markets in and we couldn't do that, and mobile vending on food trucks not allowed because of residential. So this is going to open a window of opportunity to do that. And so this is some of the outcome of our work. So City Council adopted this, and now we are working with the City Planning Department to identify which areas of the city will, where we will actually apply this new zoning category to then work forth. Okay. So, and now we continue again to do work, try to see what opportunities we will have to continue to input in the planning decisions. So we are looking and evaluating health and environmental benefits of neighborhood design. For example, there are major changes projected to happen over a new transit line. So we're looking at identifying sort of the health benefits of the increasing density that will actually occur along that line, which a lot of people are opposing, but we're trying to see if we can. We also provide input in terms of the parks plan, and in fact they have for the first time indicated that they will look at health inequities. And so essentially looking not just as in terms of inequity of service generally, but looking at the high-risk populations and populations in terms of ensuring that they get the ones to get the new parks as opposed to just anyone else. And we are currently working on providing a guide on the 10 principles for making Toronto an active city for all, which we will hope will be able to be used as an instrument to encourage a positive change in the way the city is built. Okay, so moving forward, what we can do in terms of a public health department is to provide the health evidence to support decisions and to, again, to advocate for certain change. And from the health evidence, identify health-promoting options and then encouraging adoption of these options. And the encouraging adoption of these options can be both at the community public level as well as the actual municipal government. Sometimes both. And as I mentioned before, transportation is considered currently the key issue in terms of making decisions we make today about improving our transportation will actually affect a generation of people. And the right choices will support a healthy city. And I believe that's the end. Thank you very much. It varies by project and initiative. Now, in the case of the active transportation pilots, we actually work with our community development officers in public health. We have community development officers, so they're actually always already on the ground working with communities, especially the at-risk communities, and so that is usually done through sort of the local organizations that with citizens organizations with which they already have connections. That's usually has been our window into the community, and so as part of the in this case here, I mean, clearly what's happening is that the community has identified areas, for example, where they do think there are issues in terms of crosswalks or crossings and so forth, and so we built upon those issues that have been identified.
Impact assessment. You have lovely tall towers, which would be key to actually something in in my case, a cycle track, a barrier protected bicycle facility. And I know Toronto had some of them. When you did the complete street with the evaluation for just wide sidewalks, mass transit, and then biking in the road, or do you know if you have a cycle track?
It's currently in process, and I'm not the one directly involved, so I don't know all the details, but I believe that we are looking at both options. Yeah. And I think in part is as we recognize that different things will have to occur in different parts of the city.